Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and I'm excited to announce that this week we have a special guest. I'd like to welcome Jen Colmore. Hi, Jen.
Hey, Michael. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Great.
Jen is a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murphy's, California, and is here with us today to talk about Africa and compassionate awareness and anything else that comes up.
Exactly.
Great.
You never know.
That's the great thing about this show.
That's the great thing.
And the great thing about life, too.
That's right. Exactly.
You know, we think we know, and then life happens.
Exactly.
Hey, do you want to tell us a little bit about what's going on in Africa?
Sure. You know, I was recently at an event where we were taking questions, and I was answering things. And I realized, you know, with how diligent we are in writing our blog, we give away pretty much all our secrets. There's not always much to tell, but actually, so that's one thing, is that we're still posting blogs from when we were there in late October.
Yeah.
The last ones are going to go up in the next few days, so keep an eye out for that.
You know, I just found a new one today, so that was fun.
Very good, yep.
Huh?
Yeah, it's a big investment to do them, and we really enjoy doing it. It's such a nice way to keep a record of what we're doing there and keep people informed. And everyone keeps telling us that when they read them, it's like getting to be a part of it, getting to be there with us.
That's my experience as well, yeah.
Yep.
And even though all of it's there, I suspect that not all of our listeners, you know, may have read all of it.
Right, yeah.
So there may be some, you know, big highlights that you might want to mention.
Yeah, yeah, and things that have happened since then. I was just on the phone with Teresa today, so, you know, every day new things are happening.
Yeah.
So the biggest thing that happened for us when we were there in October, and actually Dave may have talked about some of this when he was on the show, but we bought a property in Cantalumba in the slum where we're doing most of our work. And we're in communication with our architect who is drawing up the plans, the engineer who's drawing the plans for the building that will go on the site that's going to house the medical clinic, some more classrooms, the sewing cooperative, and a community, kind of an adult education community room.
Wow.
So that's the biggest thing on the front. That's happening.
Uh-huh. That's great. So you bought a piece of property.
Yep.
And talking with the engineer about a building that's going to be built there.
Yep.
With a lot of resources for the community, it sounds like.
Yeah. And as always, one of the most fun things about the work we're doing is the participation of people there and people here.
Yeah.
And especially the medical clinic has piqued the interest of several folks here in the United States. And so we have a lot of people who are in the medical field and or people who have just experience, you know, with the medical world who are interested in helping to make that happen.
So oh, great.
A lot of energy around that, which is really, really nice.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, to have those skills and experience and resources to bring to that.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, because, you know, the only thing that Cantalumba lacks is resources. You know, there's no lack of dedication or hope or interest or desire or, you know, they're just like us. They want all the same things for themselves and their children and their lives. And to think that we could bring a group of, say, volunteers with us to come over and teach community health workers, teach volunteers in the community the basics of how to care for themselves and their children and how to avoid malaria and what to do if, you know, there's the onset of some kind of respiratory distress happens a lot around there. And so how to not let things get, you know, out of hand, essentially, how to get medical care immediately so that things don't get to a crisis level.
I see. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. The word that comes up as you're talking is possibility.
Yes. Yeah, there is a ton of possibility. I think that's what drew us to Cantalamba, that, you know, we found this community that in some ways is large. It's 11,000 people, but it's small in the sense that it's a contained area. It's easy to communicate or possible to communicate with that group of people. And so here's a place where, you know, everything is needed and we can provide it as a team. You know, us here in the United States, them in Zambia, as a team we can come together and create this whole model that could really transform an entire community.
Yes, yes. And do you have a sense that most of the community has heard of Living Compassion and knows what's going on and all of that?
It's like an exponential kind of deal.
Wow.
I think a year ago, you know, maybe a handful of people had an idea of who Living Compassion was. In July, I think we put ourselves on the map. You know, we were out there doing those community days where we were building fences and digging trenches. And
so
in the course of that, a lot of people were passing by and saying, now who are these people who are obviously not from Zambia?
Yeah, Mzungas.
Yes, exactly, these Mzungas, working with this huge group of Zambians to make this thing happen. And I think that piqued the curiosity. When Sherry and I were there in October, being there so soon after July, I think really made people get it, that we were here, we're serious, we're here to stay, we're committed. I think people really, really got that. So, yes, I think more and more Living Compassion is becoming a household word in Cantalamba.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
And the sense I get from it, as you mentioned also, is I get a real sense of partnership.
Yeah.
Not us coming to help them.
Yes.
But a real two-way communication, and
exactly.
It's wonderful.
Exactly. Yeah, and I feel that when we did some research and found ourselves a way to call Zambia without too much expense, and so I just love being able to pick up the phone and talk to Teresa about, you know, the day-to-day details of what's going on. For that very reason that you're saying, it really brings a partnership feel to it. And also sharing the blog. When we get feedback from people that reading the blog here, they feel really a part of it and they feel included, that's the other piece of it, that it's not just, you know, me and Sherry and the monks. And
yes.
It's all of us together really making this happen.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That's great. Jen, let me give out the phone number.
Okay.
And if people want to join our conversation. The phone lines are open here. If you'd like to call, please give us a call toll-free in North America, 866-613-1612. I'm sure Jen would be happy to talk about Africa, compassionate awareness, and or whatever is going on.
Exactly.
That's great.
Yep. Yeah.
So, Jen, is there anything more you'd like to talk about with respect to Africa or practice or things that you're looking at?
Or anything under the sun.
Yes.
Well, as I said, I just spoke with Teresa today, and she's moved into the house with the children. So where Ignatius and Grace were the caregivers for the children living in the Living Compassion House, she's taken that place mostly because Ignatius has taken a job with the copper mines, and it's taking most of his time. He actually commutes up into the Congo every day.
Yes.
And so Teresa, who is Ignatius's sister, has always been their favorite aunt.
Uh-huh.
So it was really kind of the children's idea as we were looking at, gosh, how to accommodate this life shift. And we met together as a family. Again, kind of that partnership feeling. It feels to us like we're essentially part of that family.
Yes.
And we had a family meeting, and we looked at what to do around that, and decided that Teresa was the best person to move in and be their main caretaker.
Yes.
And so I spoke with her today, and they've just made that move about 10 days ago, and they're all very excited.
Wow.
Yep. So that's working well.
Good.
She said that Kaleji had malaria, so...
Oh, wow.
That's always a... When I get that kind of news, it's always a real reminder to me that it's a different life in Zambia.
Yes.
It's it's part of the deal to get. He's better now. He's getting better, so that's good. But he's one of the boys. He's about 10 now, 10 years old.
Yes.
So. Yeah.
And with sort of access to medical care in a quick enough time, is malaria not life threatening?
Definitely.
Uh huh.
Exactly. And that's a key point, that usually the reason malaria becomes life-threatening is that it's not caught in time.
I see.
When it's caught in time, usually it's very treatable. There are unusual cases where that's not so, but in most instances, it's very treatable. And so, yeah, he's lucky because he starts to feel sick, and Teresa knows immediately to take him to the clinic.
Oh, good.
Get the medicine that he needs, and he was better within a number of days, actually.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, I was just guessing, with malaria so prevalent, that I expect that the symptoms of it, people are kind of well known.
Very well known. Yeah. Uh-huh. Very well known, and malaria is still the number one killer in Southern Africa, above HIV/AIDS.
Wow.
So.
Uh huh. Yeah. Uh huh. Even though AIDS gets all the press, so to speak.
Yeah.
Malaria is the number one killer.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
Jen, I had a thought for a topic for us to talk about,
uh-huh.
which I think we may have talked about on other occasions. It's the connection between, for me, the connection between spiritual practice and service.
Yes. Yes.
And you wrote in one of the blogs, you may remember this, that practice and service are a powerful pair.
Mm-hmm.
And it just really stuck in my head. I was like, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe you could elaborate on how that movement inward, outward, maybe even what is inward and outward.
Right. Yeah, well, I remember the day that I wrote that, actually, was a day, our days in Zambia are always really, really full, and it was another very full day, and I was by myself. Sherry had gone at that point. And I came home and, was sort of an unrealized expectation of just, okay, done for the day, just quiet, maybe sit, meditate, just, be quiet. And soon after I got home, there was a knock on my door, and Douglas, who is the baker at the guest house,
yes,
came and knocked on my door and said, "There's someone here to see you." And I thought, oh, I don't want to see someone.
Yes.
And I went out, and it was Elvis, who was the young boy who we had befriended back in July, and I remembered that I had seen him on the street a couple days ago and suggested he come by and talk on that evening, and so sure enough, he'd come by. And he just immediately, I sat down and settled into a conversation with him without any resistance. I just was able to drop that story of, I don't want to do this, I'm too tired, I need time for me, and just have a conversation with him. And as we wrapped up the conversation and he was leaving, it was a conversation where he was asking for things from Living Compassion. He's an orphan. He supports his younger siblings. And so it was a very common conversation that we have around, I need help and that kind of thing. And as we wrapped up the conversation and he left, I just realized that I felt energized instead of drained.
Uh-huh.
And that was the moment for me where I realized, gosh, it's such a beautiful combination to be in service out of practice.
Yes.
So as I'm practicing, I'm able to drop the story of what I want or what I need, and I'm able to actually let life serve me and serve through me, essentially.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Allowing life to serve you and serve through you.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I remember that section of the blog. I remember reading that section of the blog, and it was really inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
That sense of, well, there were a couple things that I got out of it. One, that sense of that a piece of practice is taking care of ourselves.
Right.
Not just give to everybody else, and somehow I'm excluded from that kindness and compassion, but rather I'm a piece of that.
Yes, yes.
And for me, it's one way I look at it is, if I don't take care of myself, I'm not going to be available for anyone or anything else.
Yes. Exactly. So in that scenario, if I didn't have practice, let's say, and there just was that story running of, I need time for me, this is a drain, very likely that interaction would not have felt energizing to me.
Yes.
It would have felt, oh, God, this is a burden, and why me, and I'm all by myself here, and I have to do it all. And
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the other piece of it I remember from the blog is your sense that there was a whole team there in Africa that could help in coming up with a plan for Elvis.
Exactly.
That you didn't need to decide in that moment, you know, what needs to be done.
Yes. Yeah, oh, I'm glad that was huge.
Yes.
That was huge.
I got that sense.
Yeah, because again, you know, each of us has our own deal, our own sort of main stories we walk around in life with. And for me, certainly, it can be, it's all up to me. I've got to make this work. And so to realize that's not at all true, in fact, that doesn't serve.
Uh-huh.
For me to keep it to myself and to rely just on me to come up with the way it should work is not going to be the best.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm not going to be able to come up with all the right answers and all the best ways that things can work. It's really much more benefit to everyone to open it up to a team of people to get a bigger view.
Yes. Much more beneficial to open up to a whole team rather than taking it all on yourself.
Yep.
I have to figure this out. I need to do it. I need to make this happen.
Yep.
I.
Exactly. I. Which, and of course, so all the quote-unquote solutions are going to come from a conditioned place.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let me give out that phone number again. The phone lines are open here. If you'd like to call and talk, we have a special guest today. Jen Colmore is a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center and intimately involved with all of the work going on in Zambia with Living Compassion. Phone number is toll-free in North America, 866-613-1612. Jen, I was talking a little bit earlier about that connection between practice and service, and for me it comes from a place of learning how to find more compassion for myself, mm-hmm. and that process of finding that compassion is not personal. So in the sense that when I learn how to find compassion, it's not just finding compassion for myself, but I learn to find compassion for everything.
Uh-huh. So in other words, as you're doing the practice of compassionate awareness, and you're finding compassion for yourself, it's not just for you. It translates to essentially everyone you're around, everything you're around.
Yes, yes. It feels like it enlarges that capacity to be compassionate in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So before there was maybe a small amount of compassion,
right?
And you know, I needed it just for me.
Right, exactly.
Me. Not enough to go around. I don't have enough. And with practice, as we get a sense of, you know, it's not just all about me.
Yeah.
And there is enough to go around.
Yes.
And it's okay for me to reach out.
Yes.
And share and assist what I have.
Yes. Yeah. It's like that old adage, you know, well, it's also like Sherry's quote, the more you give, the more you get.
Yes.
You know, so love, you know. If you want love, give love. Yeah.
Yes.
It reminds me of, you know, Sherry was just interviewed for the San Francisco Chronicle.
Oh.
For the, what's the name of the column, I think, is Finding My Religion.
Oh.
And it's actually online now, so people could Google that.
San Francisco
Chronicle, Finding My Religion. I just found it today. And the fellow interviewed her about gratitude.
Oh.
He talks about the focus of our attention. And so, you know, he talks about, he asks her some question about, you know, how you do the practice of gratitude. And she talks about focusing on the things that I'm grateful for. And we're so trained to focus on what I don't have, what's not working, you know, all of that kind of thing. And yet to turn our attention to what I do have, what is working, it's not the place of, oh, if I'm going to be a good person, then I better find all the things that I'm grateful for. And
right.
You know, it's not that. It's literally turning the focus of our attention.
Uh-huh.
That's what was coming up for me as you were talking. So,
So
turning my attention to how can I assist? How can I participate? How can I, you know, what can I give here?
Uh-huh.
And that in doing that, we receive so much just in that shift of focus.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. That shift of focus from not getting what I want, getting what I need, but simply appreciating what I do have.
Exactly.
So the focus seems like, from when I'm in conditioned mind, is not getting what I want, not enough,
right.
Something wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when we turn our attention away from that to what I do have, what I am receiving,
yeah.
It seems like that gratitude is naturally there.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's actually one of the things, to tie it back into Africa, one of the reasons I love spending time in Africa is that it seems, for whatever reason, that the ability to really appreciate what one has is such a part of that culture.
Uh-huh.
Just that, you know, we look around and to us the life circumstances that many folks are living in are just unacceptable, unbearable. And yet, you know, to walk into a church, say on a Sunday morning, and see the joy that's expressed and the enthusiasm for life and the gratitude is just—it's a beautiful thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. So when you go over there, you don't find people who are sort of focused on not enough or what's wrong,
but
rather people who are grateful for what they have.
Yeah.
For circumstances that we might see as unbearable.
Right.
Impossible.
Yep.
Despairing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really inspiring.
Yes. Yes. And I'm reminded, too, of Sherry talking about wanting to bring people over.
Yeah,
wanting
exactly.
people to be there, to have the experience.
Yep.
To be with people.
Exactly. That's one of the... one of our main objectives with the work in Africa is certainly to assist and to bring tangible aid to the folks in Cantalamba and beyond, but also the transformation that happens in sharing two cultures is so big. And so that's a really big piece of our vision. You know, people will talk about, well, gosh, it's expensive airfare for me to go, and I feel like maybe I should... you know, donate that money instead to the project. And yes, that's great. That's a really significant way to participate, to donate financially, and to physically come with us is life transforming, really. To spend time in another culture, to spend time in Africa, and to see what there is there. It just, you know, in my experience, it changes a life.
Yes, yes, yes. I have not been there, and I expect that will be the experience.
Yeah.
When I do go.
Very good.
There's, you know,
it's on your to-do list.
It's on my to-do list for 2008. So.
Oh, very good.
Save me a space.
Well, you're a brave man with a small child.
Huh?
Headed to Africa.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I was going to say I lost my train of thought there. But that, right, so there's participation by writing a check,
yep,
which is exceedingly valuable.
Yes.
And there's also that participation of going there and seeing with my own eyes.
Yes.
And meeting people and having that experience.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, there are, it's so fun because all the different ways that people participate is what puts the whole together.
Uh-huh.
I had a conversation with a woman recently who is in a place to be able to give substantial financial assistance to live in compassion.
Yes.
And she's not in a place to give time. She's not in a place where she can assist on a volunteer level. She doesn't have the time to come to Africa. And we had a conversation, and she said, you know, I really want to help, and this is the way that I can help. And I thought, gosh, that's so true. That's so true that each of us has, wherever we are, with whatever we have the way that we can participate.
Uh-huh.
And each person giving what they have to give is what creates the whole, is what makes it all happen.
Yes, yes. That's exciting. So this woman has financial resources to give.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't have the time or the time to go to Africa.
Yep.
And each of us giving what we have to the best of our abilities really makes the whole thing work.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And, you know, again, the practice and service theme, to me, the biggest contribution that we each have, we each give, is practicing for ourselves.
Uh-huh. Yep. Uh-huh. The biggest gift that we have is practicing for ourselves.
Yeah.
Can you say a little more about that?
Well, it just occurs to me, you know, when you were saying that there can be a place where it feels like there's a limited amount of, say, compassion.
Yes.
And I need to hold on to that for myself. And actually, from a conditioned perspective, everything's limited, right? There's only, you know, this much love and this much attention and this much care. And so I have to kind of carve out my piece of the pie, which is really, if we globalize that, there we are, right?
Yes.
All trying to get me for mine.
Yes.
And so to practice and to really realize for ourselves that, in fact, that isn't how life works, that, in fact, there's plenty for all of us of everything, really.
Yes.
And as I realize that, I'm able to let go and to share what I have, to share myself, and to receive. And so I no longer am holding up kind of those boundaries of, you know, I need for me, and, you know, only after I get for me, then you can have for you. And that in practicing, we're really able to receive what life is giving us, and then kind of it goes out from there.
Wow. That's exciting. A little testimony for practice.
Right.
Great.
Yeah.
Jen, we're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
And we have a caller, and we'll take him right after the break.
Great.
Coming up next on Open Air, in our second half of today's show, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious, compassionate awareness, updates on the work in Africa, and we'll be taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Today we have a special guest. Jen Colmore is a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murphy's, California, and is intimately involved with the Living Compassion work in Zambia. Thanks for being on the air with us, Jen.
Thank you, Michael.
Jen, we have a caller.
Great.
I'd like to welcome George from Pennsylvania. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hey, George.
Hi, Jen.
How are you?
Good. Well, first of all, I wanted to say that I've been following the work that you all have been doing in Africa, and it's so exciting.
Great. You've been following through the blog?
Incredible. Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it goes right to my heart because many years ago I was involved in work in rural areas of the Philippines, working with people, helping them develop some small handcraft industries and then importing those to this country and selling them and trying to set up a, you know, distribution network and so on. And so it's just such such exciting, such totally involving work.
Yes.
I know. I mean, I just, you know, listening to what's said and looking at the photos and everything, it takes me right there.
It's yeah.
Great.
Yeah. So you know that experience of being kind of there on the ground and helping to make, essentially, create huge opportunity where there wasn't any before.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Kind of a catalytic effect.
Yes.
That's wonderful. I my heart wants to be involved more.
Mm-hmm.
And my body and my mind.
The whole package.
I'm not sure how and when, but...
Yeah. Well, and I suspect that as the work grows and becomes kind of more solidified, isn't quite the word I'm looking for, but that there will be more opportunity for people to be involved in all different ways. So
more systems get set up and
exactly,
exactly, they can begin to be duplicated in other areas.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, so someone who has expertise in micro business, which is essentially what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, great.
Yeah.
Gosh, I mean, in 6 months to a year's time, that's I think that piece of the program is going to explode.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah,
because that seed capital or seed money makes such an incredible difference.
Exactly.
Part of the formula.
Yeah, so you probably read that Sherry and I went to Washington D.C.
last week.
Yeah. So seed money is the big buzzword around D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's
micro loans and so on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's why we went, to begin conversations with some of those government aid organizations to see what kind of funding is available to begin to jumpstart.
And it was it looks promising.
The thing that was so heartening about it was how sincere and dedicated each of the folks that we met with was. We were both new to the D.C. scene and didn't really know what to expect, and it was just really nice to find people behind those desks who seem like they really want to make a difference.
Yeah.
That was nice.
And they're really all over the place.
Yes.
On the surface, you wouldn't know it, but, when you actually go there and sit down with them, there's just a lot of wonderful, positive energy that wants to move and make things happen.
Yes, exactly. Wants to move and make things happen. Yeah. So, you know, I'm sure from your time in the Philippines, so there you are in the Philippines, and there are all these people making beautiful things. The only thing that's missing is the market for them.
The only thing that's missing is the market, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Getting them to market.
The market, yeah.
Yeah, I want to order some of the things that you've been bringing over just to see and, you know, kind of get a feeling for what where we might be able to go with some of them.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, I think selling them on the website is wonderful because it's tapping right into the whole family of kindred spirits that are there that want to support and so on. And I think it'll probably evolve, possibly kind of serendipitously from there, that people will make contact with other people, that they'll, there's a question of course, direct marketing, which is great because there's no quote unquote middle people.
Right.
But also it's great to find people that you can wholesale to that'll really get behind something like that. And
yes. In fact, one of Sherry's dreams has always been that the town of Murphy's, where the monastery is, would adopt Cantalomba. And we had a couple businesses approach Sherry just like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Did you hear about that? Yeah, so December 1st and 2nd is a big shopping extravaganza in Murphy's where they close the streets to cars, and it's a whole holiday kind of fanfare. And there are at least so far three businesses that are going to feature big posters of Living Compassion's work, photos of the children and information
so
about it in
that.
Their storefront.
Wow.
And that our products will be featured, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can remember the story about the time when local people were somewhat up in arms about the fact that the monastery was going to be built there.
Right. Yes, that's right. Yeah. Isn't that funny? I know.
Oh, wow.
And
this
San Francisco Chronicle article has already brought some more attention, and I just got a call from a reporter in Stockton today saying, "Hey, I didn't even know you guys were out there."
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, this is the kind of news we need to read more and more of, to know that and to be inspired by this kind of work that's being done.
Yeah. Yeah.
We need a national newspaper that prints all this, that's readily available to people. But it'll get there. It's definitely coming.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Get over our addiction to bad news
as
a culture.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, now to come back to me, I got a me thing here.
Okay, very good.
I've been getting these incredible attacks of self-hate lately, and they've been in my dreams.
Mm.
And, there'll be these dreams in which, I didn't handle something very well, or I didn't really know how to do something, and I did it wrong, or I messed it up, and people are starting to realize that I don't know what I'm doing, and, there's kind of a paranoia kind of thing, and
mm-hmm.
just all these really disgusting, egocentric, karmic conditioning,
sure.
Fed dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wake up in this anxiety from the dreams.
Yeah.
And so far, up until this morning, I've been able to catch it and not let it attach to the day.
Uh-huh.
But today, it just, no matter what I did, it just attached itself to the whole day. And
uh-huh.
the whole day, I've been going around carrying this incredible anxiety
uh-huh.
about nothing in particular, but worrying about everything. You know, everything that I have to do, everything that's coming up all of a sudden, instead of a joy and a desire to do it, it's a worry.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just it's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I think part of it started when the first thing that started to fall, quote-unquote, fall apart was I forgot to call in to receive my reflective listening training,
uh-huh.
something that I really, really wanted to do, and uh-huh. I forgot. I just simply forgot to do it.
Uh-huh.
And then I didn't handle a couple of situations very well, and all of this, was fertile territory for
sure.
self-hate to come in and pick up on all this stuff and say, look, I mean, there's something wrong with you.
Right.
You're not doing well enough. You're not, it's something wrong, not enough.
Right, yeah.
Lots of it.
It's almost like, well, one or two things maybe, but I mean, all of these things.
Yeah, I mean, this just shows you that, you're really not doing very well.
Yeah.
You thought you were.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's this whole, and all my life I've struggled with this kind of manic depressive thing, mm-hmm. back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
So that as soon as I start getting this anxiety, I get anxiety about the anxiety.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Big time, So, oh no, here I go again. I'm going into several months of anxiety and depression.
Right.
And so all these voices come in and say, see, yep, there really is something wrong with you. There you go again.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to happen just like it happened the last time. You're mm-hmm. going to be plodding along for the next 6 months,
right.
feeling terrible and, full of anxiety and, dreading every day and so on and so forth. And I'm saying, whoa, I really want to, I think there's an opportunity now to work with it more than I was able to work with it before.
That's a lot of what was coming up for me as I was listening to you talk. We'll talk a lot in practice about that place where it's all going on, the same thing that always goes on, the familiar voices of self-hate, the mm-hmm. same content that runs through my head,
mm-hmm.
The anxiety, it's so familiar.
Right.
And yet there's an awareness that's running alongside of it.
Yes. Yes, there is.
I mean, what you're describing, like today was a perfect example. You were all day, there was that kind of dream residue with you that was throwing a layer on top of your day,
mm-hmm.
and all day you were aware that that was going on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
So that really is an opportunity because, it's like having a front row seat for looking at karma.
It is, and yet it's the suffering is still there.
Yes.
You know, and
yes.
I mean, I don't like suffering.
Yes.
Like
yes.
it.
Yeah.
You know, because I you know, I just went through several months of feeling fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
And,
well, and as a student of awareness, we know that suffering is there, right? We know that when I'm believing the voices of self-hate, you know, when karma's there, that's suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And so, perfect opportunity. Here I am in the front row seat. I'm looking at karma, and I can get my magnifying glass out and go, where's the suffering? How is this? Where's the place of suffering? Is the place of suffering that I had the dream, the anxiety dream, or is the place of suffering that I, you know, where is it? Is it that I'm believing? Is it that I'm, you know, to really look and see, where does the line cross between, it sounds like you've had some time before this, of a place of well-being,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm in the well-being, and now I'm suffering. How did that transition happen? What's
yeah.
the difference
yeah.
there between those two places?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just absolutely amazing. It's such a stark contrast.
Yes. And to me, a big clue is when you were talking about the voices saying, oh, look at you. Now, you know, you're going to be 6 months of this anxiety, I mean, this deep depression, you know, all these you voices, you this,
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Yep.
So that's a big clue.
Oh, yes.
Right? So if my companion is someone who hates me
mm-hmm.
and is talking me into, you know, this terrible life experience, that's very different than, you know, so I miss my reflective listening buddy's call. Gosh, what would I want? Well, I'd want someone to say, gosh, I'm sorry, George. I know you were really looking forward to that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that happened.
Well, there's both of those voices going on. I mean, there is
yep.
the mentor, there's
yep.
the mentor, and there's self-hate.
Yep.
And self-hate right now has the upper hand.
Yep, yep. And so what, you know, what would the mentor have to say? So self-hate has the upper hand right now.
Well, the mentor would say that, just exactly what the mentor said. Let's see, what's medicine? The voices want you now to believe that everything is wrong.
Right.
Before everything was right.
Yep. Yeah, the
they're just what they are. You had some anxiety dreams, and the anxiety managed to attach to your day.
Yep.
And the voices are very loud right now, and a part of you is believing them. Yep. There's definitely a part of me that believes them.
Yeah, yeah. And can that be okay?
Well, yeah, that's the question.
And
that
yep.
be okay.
Yep.
And once it's okay, then it's okay. There isn't really much anxiety hanging around when things are okay.
Exactly. Exactly. So the dream attached itself to the day. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was curious to, because I know that Sherry's been through some of this. And I know that she went through a practice of waking up every 2 hours
uh-huh.
during the night and actually getting up.
Yep.
And I really wanted to know more about that. Mm-hmm. I guess I will come to know more about that. But
yeah.
That may be something that would be helpful to me at this point.
Yep. Yeah. Well, the idea behind it being that, and this was coming up for me as you were talking also, that very often what will happen when we're paying very close attention during the day
mm-hmm.
and we're very aware and we're watching the processes that are going on for us and we've really got an eye on conditioning, you know, it can't do a whole lot when
right.
that
right.
when that kind of clear attention is on it.
Yeah.
So it will use nighttime to
yeah.
do what it wants
yeah,
to
that's
do.
Exactly. That's exactly what it's been doing for the last few weeks.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I've been watching it, and I've been able to keep it from attaching to the day.
Yeah.
But today, it just nailed me.
Yeah, yeah. And so what people will sometimes experiment with is just breaking up the night.
Yeah.
So not giving conditioning long stretches of time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so for some folks it might be, you know, we joke about drink a lot of water before you go to bed. Well,
right.
That will keep you getting up during the night.
Yeah.
Setting an alarm clock for some people for intervals
mm-hmm.
to wake up regularly.
Mm-hmm.
For some folks it's even just setting the intention
mm-hmm.
to wake up. Some people have a good internal alarm clock.
Yeah.
But something to just break up the night so that it's not one long stretch where conditioning has its way.
Yeah, I may try that.
Yeah. Yeah, and to me, part of what's really powerful about that is that it's a really clear commitment to myself. So, you know, if I'm someone who really likes to sleep and I want to sleep through the night, mm-hmm. and I make that commitment to wake up regularly, it's a clear signal that I'm standing for the heart of this person.
Yeah.
What I want for this person is freedom, is kindness, mm-hmm. is compassion, not a long stretch of being abused by conditioning.
Yeah. Okay.
So you'll have to report back and tell us, George.
Yes, I will. I will keep you.
Yeah.
I'll keep calling.
Okay, very good.
I'm getting more and more comfortable with calling in. It's just
excellent.
A real joy to do so.
And
it's so wonderful. I'm so grateful to you and Sherry and Michael and everyone involved in this program. This is really a lifeline to a lot of people.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it works because we participate.
Oh, yeah.
Michael and I were talking about participation. Calling in is one way to do that.
Yeah.
Very good. Thanks for calling, George.
All right. Thank you, Jen.
Okay, take good care.
Talk to you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, George, and thanks for the kind words about the show. We appreciate that.
Yeah.
You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on Talk Radio. Today we have a special guest with us, Jen, who's a monk and Monastery Peace Center and also directly involved with Living Compassion work in Zambia. Jen, we have about 6 minutes left or so.
Okay.
I noticed something coming up for me as we were talking about service and practice,
mm-hmm.
is that no matter how much I commit to practice and grow that commitment,
mm-hmm.
apparently it's not quite enough.
Can you say more about that?
Yeah. You know, the bar from conditioning or self-hatred is just, you know, if I'm not a combination of Martin Luther King, Mother Teresa, Mahatma Gandhi, Jesus, and the Buddha, you know, I'm really just kind of taking up too much space here.
Right. And all that oxygen you're breathing in, I mean, think how many other beings could use that oxygen.
Yeah, driving my car, you know, what I'm doing to the environment and...
Right. Yeah.
And on and on.
You know, I'm so glad you bring that up, Michael, because I sometimes have a, when we get on the radio and talk about Africa, I sometimes have a, you know, little in the back of my head, hoping that people don't walk away with that, because that's such a place that conditioning wants us to go with service.
Yes.
Oh, I don't want to think about it, because usually the implication is because I'm a bad person and I don't do enough of it.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's so not a story to fall for.
Yes. And for me, perhaps other people as well, you know, if I can't do it at this incredibly high level, it's, you know, I can't do anything.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to help the environment, you know, picking up a couple cans is really not helping anything.
So don't bother. Yeah.
And what I get from practice is, you know, here I have this moment and this life, and, you know, it's apparent to me as I look around that there are a lot of places that I could actually make a contribution.
Yes.
And it feels really great to do that.
Yeah.
And when I'm not focused on everything that I haven't done and how I'm not meeting this standard or that standard, then, you know, quite a lot of stuff actually does get done.
Yes. And things that actually go right by the radar screen because, as you say, oh, they're not big, they're not important, they don't count.
Yes.
So I never, you know, we talk in the Best Year Yet process that that we often do, well, we do it once a year with Jan LeTender in Palo Alto.
Yes.
It's a big workshop that we do, and a piece of the program that Best Year Yet talks about that's so important is acknowledgement.
Yes.
You know, acknowledging what we do, and so often self-hate conditioning keeps us in the cycle of what we don't do and how we're not good enough, and so we go right past all the things we do every day that are service, really.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, that's my favorite part of the Best Year Yet program.
Mm.
Because it seems like in, quote, normal conditioned life, there's a to-do list.
Yes.
And on the to-do list is things that have not been done.
Right. Right.
And rarely do we get a chance to make the list of things that have been done.
The done list.
The done list. the to-do list. And that's what we do.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful.
Yeah.
Because when I turn and ask conditioning and say, hey, conditioning, how do you think I've been doing for the past couple of days? You know, what do you think? Did I get a lot done?
Right.
You know, and the answer's going to be predictable.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So I actually have to turn and bring my attention and focus on that.
Yes. Yep, to focus on what I accomplished.
Yes.
And to really, yeah, broaden my definition of that.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
As you say, it's, you know, the bar can be up at, you know, acts of world peace and, you know.
Yes, absolutely. I can see for myself, for example, that spending time with my son or with my wife, building those relationships, you know, that's not contributing to world peace or transforming the world. And, you know, I'm not flying to Africa like Jen and Dave and Sherry and getting in the trenches, so I'm really not doing anything.
Yeah.
And what a downer.
Oh, God. And I think of Mary Capenda. Mary Capenda is the mother of Teresa, Ignatius, Brother John, and she has two other children as well.
Yes.
And, you know, I mean, talk about an average person. You know, she's a woman living in a slum, Cantalamba, Ndola, Zambia. She had five children. You know, I mean, she's just living her life. And yet, in the way that she lived her life, she had an extraordinary group of children.
Yes.
And from that, I mean, I just think of this every day when we're in Cantalamba. The only reason I'm standing in Cantalamba is because of Mary Capenda.
Wow.
Because of how she lived her life.
Yes.
And, you know, was she Mother Teresa? No. But, my God, just in the way that she lived her life, she has had an impact on that entire community, a huge impact. You know, she's brought the entire world in there, essentially.
Yes.
So it really is, you know, you spend time with Martin, with your son, and it's big.
Yes, growing the heart of compassion.
Growing the heart of compassion, exactly.
Yes. Yeah. Jen, we are out of time.
Okay.
Thanks so much for spending the hour with us.
Thank you, Michael.
Yes.
Pleasure.
Yes, and we'll do it again sometime.
We will.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you, Jen.
Thanks, Michael.
Good night.
Bye-bye.